Hi, I'm W2OP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Ewan Morton,
who plays Hedwig in Hedwig and the Angry Inch at the Kennedy Center now through July 2nd. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm going to actually start off by telling you my Hedwig story. I saw it on Broadway with Neil Patrick Harris a couple years ago.
I don't know who that is, but yeah.
He's already in character. And throughout the show, he kept playing to our balcony box. Me and the gal that I was with at the time, they shined the spotlight on the balcony three times, and it got progressively, how should we say, dirtier, his comment each time. Do you guys have anything similar at the Kennedy Center where you play to anyone in the audience?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not so much the balconies, because these theaters are larger than the Broadway House. We've been on tour and playing in some 4,000 seat theaters.
But as
Neil did, I hump the face of a stranger, which is always a high point in my career. There's a lot of audience
interaction.
Happens
at the Kennedy Center a lot.
No, it doesn't seem like it does. I play to the balcony a lot because that's where the poor people are.
Right.
I like to play to the poor.
Right. That's why you came in here and do an interview with me.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
No, that's awesome. No, all right. Before we dive too far into funny anecdotes, let's hit him with the premise really quick. Explain who Hedwig is and what the Angry Inch is.
Okay.
I might have to dance around that on air, but go for it now.
Hedwig was born a boy named Hansel in East Berlin, whilst the wall still existed, obviously, wants to escape, wants to get over the wall. And his mother and his lover, an American soldier at the time, suggest marriage. But of course, gay marriage is not legal then, there. They kind of drive him towards the position of a sex change operation. And it is botched and leaves him with an angry inch, a lump of flesh.
So that's the angry inch.
Yes, but it works, and he escapes over the wall, and he ends up in America, and he's with his now husband, who then leaves him a month later, and she is trying to discover herself and find a place in the music scene and falls in love with someone else. And basically the story starts from her place today in her life, and she goes back and explains the story. But actually it sounds like a very odd and sort of out there piece, but really the story is about our similarities. It's about love, it's about regret, it's about the need to be recognized, it's about the need to be supported, it's about our relationships with our families, and that's a universal subject. So really, although Hedwig is very different, she's talking to people about our similarities, and I think that's why it's important today, because we're all being told that we are different, that your neighbor is the enemy, and Hedwig is here to tell you that that's not true. Also, on one side of the wall, he's male, and on the other side of the wall, she's a female, and whilst it's literal in this sense, it's also, I believe, true of all of us. I mean, we are chromosomes, we are X's and Y's, and we are parts of a whole and the whole of a bunch of parts. And I think that, you know, if we've somehow managed to take down the wall of separation between church and state in this country, people are constantly telling us about God and abortion and all the rest of it, and why we can't have these things because this is what Jesus teaches us. But at the same time, they are building walls between us as human beings. The proletariat, the white are being separated from the blacks, the Christians from the Muslims, the gays from the straights. All of these new walls are going up. They're not that new, actually, but they're being built higher, they're being built wider, because if you separate the masses, they can't come together to fight what is oppressing them. It just seems odd to me that the walls that they want torn down are torn down, and the ones that they don't are built higher. And I think that's why Hedwig again is pertinent today, because she's talking about smashing those walls down with her giant limey heels.
You mentioned the giant limey heels. Explain the getup that you get to put on every night.
Well, she's definitely a punk chick. You know, she has a huge wig. She has 5.5 inch platform heels. She's wearing this little denim onesie, and she changes into a hairdress and then a little black slip. I mean, she is not afraid of her physical being, and she's not a womanly woman. You know, certainly when I play her, anyway, I'm overweight and disgusting. But she's not mincing around the stage pretending to be a woman. I mean, look, at the very basics, she doesn't have any breasts. They're made of tomatoes.
Right.
She stuffs her bra with tomatoes. She never finished the operation. She isn't. She says herself, there ain't much of a difference between a bridge and a wall. Tommy describes her as more than a woman and more than a man. She is a new being, a more complete being, and I believe that's what the end of the show is about. She transcends sexuality and gender. She transcends party lines. She transcends black and white. She is all of us. I really believe that. It's why I took the job. I thought having Hedvig's voice on a national tour across this country, taking what could be considered a safe space for certain people, mm-hmm. to towns and cities that don't necessarily have safe spaces, and taking her into places where she's fully recognised and understood, would be a wonderful way to play this character. I feel like the luckiest of the Hedvigs.
That's true, because it's one thing seeing it, you know, in on the Broadway, safe place of New York City.
New York is the safe space. People come there and they watch that show and they know what they're seeing. Hedvig across the country, she is the safe space. Not for everyone. There are people who come and they are deeply challenged by the show, but on the whole, they stay, and they stay because she's charming, yeah. as well as angry. She's good as well as bad. She's kind as well as unkind. Yeah. She's, you know, she's mean, but she's also giving. And I think people recognize themselves, even those who don't wish to. People recognize themselves in Hedvig.
Speak to some of our listeners that you said that some might be challenged, let's say. Let's say if some of our listeners are like, I don't know if I want to see it. Why should they come anyway?
Well,
how will they be pleasantly surprised?
Well, I think partly because being challenged in life is what makes the difference. I mean, to rest upon one's laurels because we've achieved all we think we can, or that we just want to be safe and secure, will probably in the end kill us all.
Right.
I mean, that's what's keeping us from moving forward, is our apathy. Mm-hmm. Hedvig is not apathetic and demands that you be no longer apathetic. And I think that all of us right now, and I'm not talking politically, I'm talking socially, should want to be challenged, should want to learn our absolute capacity. I think most of us are probably not living to it. And whilst people are going to say, but it's just a musical about maybe what can it change? Art has been changing things since the Greeks and the Romans, and indeed the petroglyphs and the paintings and the writings forever.
Yeah.
Human beings are artistic intrinsically, and this is an artistic show. The writing is beautiful, the music is fantastic, the character is wonderful. Her husband is this crinkled up little man in a corner, played by a woman, who becomes this butterfly literally at the end. You should see this show because this is the kind of challenge that will make you a more complete person. And that's not a ridiculous thing to say, because art does that constantly.
Oh, it always does. And
absolutely.
It's always, you know, 20 some years ahead of the, you know, it plants some seed, creative part, and then it grows into actual manifestation.
That is the perfect way to describe art. It is like planting a seed, the beginning of a tree inside the human soul.
I love that.
Even the bad stuff.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. That's true. It all has something to
absolutely
offer. Luckily, this isn't the bad stuff. This is top of the line. Won a bunch of Tonys. But take me a little into the history, because I'm pretty sure when it swept the Tonys a couple years ago, it was for Best Musical Revival. It started way before, like, off-Broadway, right? Explain the history a little
bit. Yeah. It started down on Jane Street in New York, which is sort of a funky Jane Street Tavern,
baby.
There you go, man. There you go. Of course you'd know the pub.
Good watering. Greenwich Village.
It started down there, and it was a little show. There wasn't any set. It was John Cameron Mitchell, the writer, and Stephen Trask, who wrote the music, was in the band.
That was his band.
That's right. They were telling that story in this little divey place, this broken down hotel, I think it was.
On Jane Street?
Yeah.
That's where it was?
I think so, yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. And it was just this story of love and difference. And it was sort of so far ahead of its time that people didn't really know what to make of it.
This is what, like late 90s?
Late 90s, yeah. I mean, it definitely had a cult following. Right. But as you said, it was 20 years ahead of its time. Now, because time moves so slowly, it's finally beginning to catch up, and Hedvig is even more relevant now. Hedvig is even more, there's a place for this, there's a larger place for this now, which is why she is where she is today. But you're right, yeah, it started 20 years before society caught up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could say the same for Rent or anything, like, around the same time. So.
Well, it's true. You mean, you could say the same for anything. You could say the same for Social Law. You could say this, you know, it takes a visionary to make a change. And John Cameron and Stephen were visionaries and gave their vision to Hedvig, And she's been smashing it over your head now for 20 years.
That's so. It's hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about the, you know, they're brilliant, you know, the premise, contributions to, you know, the commentary, the story. We got to talk about the rock music, man, because this is probably arguably one of the greatest rock musicals I've ever done.
So isn't it just? Yeah. I mean, look, this is not Chorus Line.
Right.
You know, this is not a small, gentle, floaty musical. This is sometimes in your face, attacking rock or even punk.
Yeah.
But inside that, there's the beautiful ballads. There's the even the more musical traditional stuff for musical theater. It's Stephen has written a score with so many different genres, but which are stitched together under this sort of umbrella concept of similarity that it all feels like one thing. He's such a great writer that he's able to bring in all different kinds of music and make it feel like one score. And as you said, it is one of the greatest rock scores out there. I mean, it's people go wild for the music, and to sing it is the kind of, well, it's challenging, first off. My voice is pretty tired, but it's also one of those rare experiences for a singer where you get to go on the vocal gymnastic journey that playing Hedvig is. It's brilliant. I love to sing it. There's nights where I finish like Origin of Love or Wicked Little Town, and I'm in my, you know, that one little tiny part of me that's still me says, that was damn good.
So is that it? Those are the two songs for you?
Those are probably my favorite. I mean, yeah. Look, I love them all. Some of them are like Angry Inch is a hard sing.
Right.
Exquisite Corpse is a hard sing. So
it's aggressive. Yeah,
it's aggressive, and it's a different place in my voice. So whilst they're fun to do, I'm doing them on a different level. Origin of Love is just one of those. The music just sort of starts at the beginning and you open up, and it's vocally easier to be open there. So those are more fun to do as a vocalist.
Describe, so that was the music. Describe what we see on set. It's been a few years since I've seen it, but I feel like, what is there, like a car maybe?
There's and half a gremlin.
Oh, say again?
You know those gremlins?
Half a gremlin.
Yeah, there's
car,
half a gremlin. It's the same set from Broadway.
Right.
Just a few things are differently laid out. It represents a musical called Hurt Locker the Musical, which is
different,
ridiculous.
Yeah, not
a different
the same Hurt Locker,
and
yeah.
That's obviously not a real musical.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the part of the story where, you know, Hurt Locker the Musical opened the night before Hedvig arrives, and it was a disaster and closed at the intermission, and so there's this spare set and an evening that wasn't supposed to be free, so Hedvig and her band get to do a show on that set.
They kind of fill the void.
Yeah, and fill the void, basically, and boy, does she fill it.
And there's lots of wigs, I remember, right?
Yeah, I'm wearing like I think three wigs at the beginning, all sort of piled up on top of each other. Yeah, there's a lot of wigs. It's pretty hefty, you know, and I have to sort of run around and dance in them, and that was a challenge, but not as challenging as the vocal part.
Yeah.
Most physically, the vocal part is the most challenging. Wearing wigs, I mean, I do that in the kitchen, so.
You're just being yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's just me in a dress.
You mentioned some of your favorite songs. Is there, in terms of the book of the musical, is there a favorite passage or line that keeps circling in your head after doing it all the time?
Yeah, I really love, now I really love saying, it is the direction of the aggression that defines the act.
Say it again.
It is the direction of the aggression that defines the act.
And explain, break that down for our listeners.
Where you point your arrow, at which target you point your arrow, is the target you will knock down. So if one man points his arrow at X and a woman points her arrow at C and someone else is pointing at D, nothing will change. But if everybody points their arrow at X, X goes down.
Yeah.
And so what Hedvig is saying, your aggressive, your needs and your wants, your hates, your anger, let's channel that in one direction. And then you can change the world, which I just think is pertinent today, especially in DC. I don't mean literally. It's having people shoot people is a terrible idea, and no one wants it to happen, and it's completely unnecessary because the human mind is far greater than the gun.
Yeah.
I mean, the human mind is far greater than the arrow. It is, of course, metaphorical. Right. But using the power of speech, the power of human intelligence, and directing it at that thing which is not as good as concise as clear makes a difference. So that's one of my favorite things to say. And I also like, I've added a little line, which John is cool with, because in the ad-libbing, there is a little bit of ad-libbing. I put on the jacket for the hairdress and I say, this is made from the skin of a dead French monkey. It's the last thing I could get out of the country before the end of the Paris Primate Accord. Which makes me laugh every night. Even if it doesn't make the audience laugh, I just keep saying it because I like it.
Keep going with it, man. I think it's funny.
I think it's great.
Tell us a little about yourself. Where did you grow up and how did you get into acting?
Well, I was born in Scotland, but I moved to London when I was 16, just about to be 17, to go to drama school. And I was there for 9 years and I've been in the US for 14. I've been a US citizen for about 8-9 months, which is great.
Thank you.
I too can be abused by the aboves now.
Join the club.
I'm one of the proletariat now.
So I just
always knew I was going to be an actor. I know that sounds really stupid, and I'm not sure why, because none of my family are. My parents are blue collar, great people, hardworking. You know, I just wanted to sit around and be other people.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I was running away from something subconsciously. Or even some days consciously.
Man, we need to bring a couch in here. We're going to really, you know, go in deep into
you shouldn't have asked.
Your time is up, sir.
Number 13, come in. Your time is up.
No, but no, it's true. It's interesting. What do you think it was? I mean, you have these blue-collar parents. I'm the same way. Grandpa was a plumber. My dad was a construction worker. You don't know you're going to be, I don't know. You're just born wanting to do a certain thing, I guess.
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I have no idea if it's nature or nurture. I mean, if I look back on my life, you know, what I remember of that period, I wouldn't have said that my nurturing was particularly... artistic. I do remember hiding behind the full-length curtains with my grandma's one very young.
Yeah.
My mother came home from work and we both popped out doing the can-can. And kicking our legs in the air. My grandma, who, you know, could barely walk most of the time.
Maybe that's where it comes from, grandma.
Maybe it does. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know. As soon as I realized I could sing, that was when I knew I would follow it.
That's awesome. And then once you got here to the States, tell our listeners some of the shows you've done here.
Well, I came here with a transfer, a West End transfer to New York. It was a show called Taboo, and it was about the life of Boy George. And I'd been playing it in London for about 18 months, on and off, 2 years. And Rosie O'Donnell, actually, came to see the show, and she said, oh, I love it. We're going to bring it to Broadway.
Wow.
And, of course, George said after she left, well, we'll never see her again. And 4 months later, she called and said, I'm taking, you know, Boy George, who was in the show, and me, who was playing Boy George, to America. You guys are coming and we're bringing the show. And she did. And, you know, God love her, she spent $16 million of her own money. And she gave it everything she had, you know. And it wasn't as successful on Broadway. I was nominated for a Tony.
Congrats,
yeah. Well, I mean, I would say congrats, but Hugh Jackman won. You know what I mean?
A little bitter still.
Well, he's Hugh Jackman.
He's Wolverine.
He's Wolverine. I said, he actually, I spoke to him after at the Tony party, and he said, oh, I'm sorry about that, mate. And I said, it's fine, Hugh, as long as you dance with me. So I forced
Hugh
Hugh Jackman to give me a 14-second dance on the dance floor.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. It was
is he was just at the Kennedy Center.
For that
Night of Laughter and Song.
Yes, he was cleaning my dressing room.
Really?
No.
He
was leaving me the Tony in the corner.
Well, what was it like, Boy George? Explain, you know, because we all know him as, you know, one thing publicly.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, what's he like?
Behind the scenes, well, I sort of, I guess, lived with him. Not really lived with him, but sort of was in and out of his home a lot for those first 6 months to sort of see how he lived. And I spent a lot of time with him. George was great, though. He said to me, look, this isn't an impersonation. I want you to interpret. So don't try and sing like me or be like me. Just... you know, watch, and if there's anything you can use, great. And if not, fine. It doesn't really matter. I'm, you know, I can be whatever you want me to be. As soon as you put the costume on, and actually, it's kind of true of Hedwig too.
Hmm.
Once you get that hair on, and the shoes, and the costume, and the makeup, which both of these characters had, although they are fundamentally different in many aspects, the audience is predisposed to accept your performance because they see the character. I mean, I don't look like me inside of that stuff, you know.
Right. Along with the ride.
They're 60% of the way there.
Right.
So you only have to give 40%.
Right.
you really only have 40% left to do to make them believe, because they're already there. So yeah.
You're all playing make-believe together.
Yeah, and actually, I would say, people always say, was it really difficult? It must be difficult to play Hedwig. Well, yeah, I mean, physically, yes. But actually, those kinds of characters are easier to play because the audience is predisposed to believe you.
Right.
You know, the characters that they've never heard of before, you have to introduce them. And you have a certain text in which to do that, a certain time, and it's your performance. A different actor would introduce that character in a different way. With Hedwig, with George, they're already introduced. They're not coming to see someone they don't know on the whole. So it makes things a little easier.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, again, it runs from now through July 2nd. In closing, why should we come out? They heard this interview. What's the final sell? What gets them there?
Well, this is the last of the venues. The tour is over after this. So
last stop.
This is it. So if you're thinking, oh, well, I'll see it in August or I'll wait till the end of July, don't. We won't be there. We're not going anywhere else. This is it. And I think you should come. Obviously, we talked earlier about the challenge that the show is, but you should also come because it's rare to find a piece of art that is that challenging, that is that unique, that is that different, that is open to any kind of audience member. Hedwig's not looking for a bunch of 20-year-olds who are already prepared.
Right.
She's also hoping to reach those who aren't. So if you think you're not right to see Hedwig, then you should definitely come because she wants to be challenged by you too. I mean, the challenge goes both ways.
Awesome.
And she changes as much as the audience does. And I've changed playing her. I really have. I thought I was an open-minded, good, kind man. Turns out I'm not.
Wow.
Yeah.
How so?
We'll just leave it there.
Okay. Awesome. Well, come on out, guys. Again, it's now through July 2nd at the Kennedy Center. And you never know. When he comes out of the curtain, he might do the can-can.
I might do the can-can. In fact, sometimes I do the can-can just so they don't look at the mess I just made.
Perfect place to leave it. Thanks so much for coming in, man.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks. Nice to talk to you.